What's going on, guys? Welcome to episode 92. Good God. We're only 8 away from 100. I'm calling all crap beer. My name is Luke. As always, I'm your host. And I apologize for last week. Fell off and did not release an episode last week because things got a little crazy. But I'm back. And although I don't have a ton of beer updates this week has been a little, I would say the last probably 10 days have been a little beer light. And the reason for that is because I've been dealing with some inflammation and some issues within my body that have kept me from getting too crazy with the beer. So I've had this little bit of like cold slash, I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm guessing it's just like allergies going on for the last few weeks. Obviously it's nothing serious, no fevers, no nothing crazy. But it's, I've had like the sniffles and a little bit of a, you know, like a frog in my throat kind of for, I mean, God, it's going on like 2 weeks now. But anyway, do have a couple beers for you. So Slice Beer Company out of Lincoln, California. My buddy Mike hooks me up with those guys, and I had two bangers from Slice on Thursday, I believe. Yep. So the first one is a collab between Slice Beer Company and Bottle Logic, and it's actually called Berry Blue Voodoo. It's a 8% sour, or a fruited sour. And their explanation of it is a collab of Bottle Logic Brewing, Imperial Fruited Sour, Blueberries, Lactose, and Madagascar Vanilla. Rated a 4.0 out of 5 on tap. Nice and tart on the hit, then it mellows to a blueberry forward creamsicle, slightly boozy. And it was good. You know, like, I mean, I definitely enjoyed it. It was a little bit on the thicker side than some of the other sours that I typically had. It had that nice creamy feel to it. Blueberry was surprisingly strong, which is uncommon because blueberry is hit or miss, like a lot of other fruit flavors when it comes to beer. And it was really prevalent, so I liked it a lot. Then we hit up Double Hard Candy, which is another collab. Oh no, this one was a slice only. 8.3% Imperial Double Milkshake IPA. This one is a hazy double IPA brew with toasted and shredded coconut and lactose. Sabro and Citra hops showcase intoxicating flavors and aromas of passion fruit, guava, coconut, pineapple, and cream. It was weird for me, right? I got tastes like the smell of banana boat sunscreen with an almost cinnamon finish. The flavor is odd but enjoyable. Definitely one that was different than expected. Now, none of their explanatory notes do you see anything about cinnamon, but for some reason this thing just, I don't know, it just tasted cinnamony to me. I don't know why. It wasn't a bad thing. I enjoyed it. I don't know if it was the mixture of flavors or what it was that kind of gave me that odd cinnamon style note, but I enjoyed it. I rated a 4.0 out of 5 on tap, so it was a decent beer for sure. You know, after I finished it, I rated it while I was drinking it. And after I finished it, I probably would have lowered the rating a little bit just because eventually that cinnamony-esque flavor kind of got aggravating. And I ended up not finishing the whole beer. I ended up pouring a little bit of it down the drain. Not because it was terrible, just because it was too much of that flavor was like, pow, you know, it was just like hit me in the face. So, but this week, I got, you know, we're going to jump into some men's health stuff. And, you know, like I said, I shied away from the beer a little bit this week because I've been dealing with some inflammation issues. And it's been something that has been frustrating, right? It's not debilitating. It's not stopping me from going to the gym. It's not hindering my progress. It might be hindering my progress, but it's not halting my progress or anything like that. My lowest weight to date is 270 pounds. The last like 6 days I've been fluctuating back and forth between like 270 and 273, which is one of the ways that I know my body is inflamed, because when I start gaining weight like that when I shouldn't be, it typically has to do with, you know, water retention and and inflammation. So I've been trying to get in with this chiropractor that is like world renowned. The dude is like incredible. He travels all over the country and adjusts like celebrities and does all kinds of stuff. Now that means nothing, right? Anybody could do that, could get in with the right people and end up being, you know, Justin Bieber's chiropractor. But the difference is that Dr. Zev is actually good at what he does, right? Like I have probably seen 25 chiropractors in my life, and he's the first one that I really felt an immediate difference. Like he has a way that he just opens everything up. And I'm not even gonna lie, man. Like after the first adjustment, he had me come 2 days back to back, right? I came Wednesday and Thursday, yeah. So after the first adjustment, I woke up Thursday morning and I felt like I had done a full body explosive workout. Everything was sore. But what was even crazier is that when I got up in the morning and I went to the bathroom and I looked in the mirror, I had veins popping out everywhere. I had veins in my traps. I had my one big vein popping out of my pec. I had, you know, veins in my triceps. I had my forearm veins were all popping out. Like, veins in my calves, veins in my quads. Like I was like, damn, dude, I'm like, that vascularity is popping. And I know a lot of that has to do ultimately with blood flow, because if you have blood flow restrictions from, you know, hindrances within your skeletal system, your musculoskeletal system, it causes, you know, limited blood flow in certain areas, and it prevents, you know, a lot of things like that from happening. So obviously he opened me up because my vascularity was off the chain. And I'll tell you what, like I went, so Thursday I didn't train. Like Wednesday I went and saw him, and then I went and trained legs. And I didn't go super crazy on legs because I know most chiropractors tell you not to train for 24 hours after an adjustment. Dr. Zev is the opposite. He says, no, man, movement is good. Just be careful and don't do anything that, you know, listen to your body and don't do anything that you feel like you shouldn't. So I felt like it was one of those days that I should just go in and kind of get a pump and not worry about moving a ton of weight, which is exactly what I did. I went in, pumped out a ton of reps on just about everything that I did. My ankle was bothering me a little bit, so I stayed away from doing calf stuff, and I just did leg extensions, leg curls. I did a leg press. I did some, forgive me, why can't I think? I did some pulsing lunges, and then I actually used the elliptical, which is not common for me. I usually ride the bike, but for some reason I was actually comfortable on the elliptical, so I went ahead and did that. And I find that the elliptical is the best possible thing you can do on a leg day, because it ultimately complements your leg workout, right? Because the elliptical definitely hits you more in the glutes, the hamstrings, and the quads than any other, even riding a bike. I mean, you're using your legs, but it's a lot of calf. You're not getting, in my opinion, I don't feel it as much in my quads and my hamstrings and my glutes, but a elliptical gets your whole lower half. And doing that after a workout, I mean, it was money, dude. Like it was a really good workout. So despite not pushing a ton of weight and kind of just doing what I felt comfortable with, I felt great. Woke up Thursday morning, like I said, felt like I got hit by a train. I was sore everywhere, but I was vascular as shit. I was like, holy crap, this is so weird. Went and saw Dr. Zev again. And the only complaints that I have, which is not an issue with him whatsoever, is all weekend, my right foot, my ankle, my arthritis was flared up like crazy. And it wasn't so bad that I couldn't walk. It was just uncomfortable walking. And then I've been dealing with numbness in my index and my middle finger, and sometimes my thumb on my left hand, which is due to a C6, C7 herniation that I have in my neck. Something that has not bothered me in years, but all of a sudden about a month and a half ago, it kicked in and started bothering me. I have no pain at all, excuse me, but I'm dealing with numbness and it's so uncomfortable. It just feels so weird not to be able, you know, to not have full feeling in these two fingers, you know what I mean? And they feel like they're cold all the time, even though when you touch them, they're not, they're warm. Like if I touch them with my other hand, the finger is not cold, but it feels cold in my hand. And I did notice a little bit of a flare up in my carpal tunnel, which I'm sure had something to do with him opening up my knuckles and my wrists and everything that he did, because he literally takes every joint and pops all your joints to get the blood flow in there and get everything opened up and moving. And it hurt, I'm not gonna lie. Like when he pulled on my ankle, man, I saw stars. When he pulled on my index finger on my left hand, I saw stars. But I said, all right, I'm gonna let this guy do his thing and roll with it. And so we did Thursday, I took the day off of the gym. I didn't do anything. I didn't even do cardio. I just was like, you know what? I'm gonna rest today, drink a ton of water. I'm gonna be all right. Friday, I went in and I hit back. And I had a killer fucking back workout. I mean, killer. Like, one of the issues that I have with my left hand because of the C6, C7 herniation is a lack of strength overall in my left arm. So what'll happen is, like, I can press 150-pound dumbbell with my right arm pretty easily. Like, I can do 10 to 12 reps, usually for 3 to 4 sets, and I'm good. My left arm starts petering out at about 80 pounds. I can't push anything more than 80 pounds. So I have to, instead of doing dumbbells, I've been resorting to machines and trying to do less weight but more reps. I really focus on a long, slow drive and then the negative, and, you know, really putting a lot of tension on the muscle. That way I don't overdevelop one side and underdevelop the other or whatever, and I've been keeping things pretty even. The only thing that I've noticed, you know, a difference in really is my shoulder. I can definitely start to see that my left shoulder is starting to see some more development than my right one. But that's always been the case. Unfortunately, that shoulder always peaks before the other one does. It's so weird, and I don't know why it does that. But the human body, baby, you know. So, killed the workout. I ended up rowing the 150-pound dumbbells for 4 sets of 10 each. With ease, right? I mean, I was exhausted and it was hard, but I mean, I was able to put up 10 reps, you know, pert with both arms. Granted, I did use straps, but even with the straps prior, I would not have been able to lift the 150-pound dumbbell with my left arm. So I was super, super excited about that. Killed the workout. I mean, I fucking crushed it. It was like an hour and 30 minutes of aggressive, heavy, heavy, heavy. I mean, dude, I was doing 230-pound pull-downs with negatives, pause reps. I did the wide row machine, which they have like a row machine that has these like adjustable handles and they go out wide. And I make sure I pull them out as wide as I possibly can. And I mean, I did the entire stack with everything, which I think is like 245 pounds, something like that, with ease for 12 reps multiple times. I mean, it was just firing through this workout. I felt so good. I mean, everything was doing good. And I just, you know, I felt amazing. The day was great. I mean, I was this close to like texting Dr. Zev and being like, dude, thank you so much. You know, I just pounded out, you know, 4 sets of 10 reps of 150 with the 150-pound dumbbells for rows for the first time since like 2018, you know, and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to bother him. I'll just tell him about it next week when I go. But then I woke up Saturday morning and I felt like I got run the fuck over by a semi. Everything hurt. I was weak. I was shaky. I didn't have a fever. I checked and everything. I actually started to be concerned because I thought I might have rhabdomyolysis, which I have had at least one time in the past that I was diagnosed with. And if you're not familiar with rhabdomyolysis, it's essentially called the overtraining disease. It's more common in like long distance runners and people like that who really put their bodies through strain, but it's not uncommon in lifters and people who, you know, and I kind of started thinking about it. Like, well, maybe with all the adjustments and then working out at the same time, maybe I just did too much. Because what ultimately happens is your body releases a toxic protein from your muscle to muscle cells when your muscle breaks down. And what happens when you train, your muscle breaks down. So when you have too much muscle breakdown prior to repair, it will actually clog your kidneys up with this protein and causes your kidneys to be unable to filter the everything that it needs to through your body so that it could come out in your urine, and it drives your creatinine levels up, And that's where you start to have like body aches and pain and fever and all kinds of stuff. But I just rested, man. I said, you know what? I said, I'm going to rest. I pounded electrolytes throughout the entire day. I drank 2 gallons of water and I took a nap midday for about an hour. And then in all seriousness, my wife brought me dinner home. I pounded my dinner down and then I went and laid down at 8 o'clock at night and I slept until 8 o'clock in the morning. And I woke up Sunday feeling a million times better, right? 90% better. So Sunday, I went ahead and hit chest and, we did church and hung out with the family. And then I attempted to go fishing, but got rained out and tried to take a day, to just relax. I wasn't even going to go to the gym. I was going to take another day off. And then after that happened, I said, I can't just sit at home and do nothing. So I went ahead and hit the gym, did a chest workout. But again, I focused more on reps, didn't do a lot of heavy weight. And I just really shot for that pump. And I felt good. I felt really good. And the rest of the day, I felt good. I didn't have any issues. I woke up this morning feeling even better. Movement is definitely key. And my ankle was still pretty damn sore yesterday. It's still pretty sore today, but it's nowhere near. And it's still pretty swollen. I'm looking at it right now, but it's nowhere near as bad as it was, like Saturday. So these are just things, man. I put a post up on Instagram on my personal page about, life and the shit that I've had to deal with, over the years. And a lot of people don't know, you guys, we've talked about it on the show. Anybody who's been listening for a long time probably has a pretty good understanding of, of what I'm going through and what I've been through. And sorry, I got choked up. People don't realize how hard it is when you're. You know that you're fucking up, right? You know that you're fucking up. Like, you are fucking up. Like, it's not, nobody else did this to you, Like, I hear people all day long, like, first of all, I'm gonna put something to rest right now, 100,000,000% before, and you can be mad at me, people can body shame, you can do whatever you want, but fat is not beautiful, okay? And I don't mean that fat people can't be beautiful. That's not what I'm saying. But people out there who are trying to normalize being obese and unhealthy and trying to tell people, oh, it's your body, it's your choice. As silly as that sounds, you got people like Lizzo, that artist out there. Love you, girl. I appreciate the fact that you're confident in yourself and that you're trying to empower women, but you're not healthy. I don't care what anybody says. It's not healthy to put strain on your heart. It's not healthy to have your organs covered in fat. It's not healthy to have high blood pressure. It's not healthy to have high triglycerides. It's not healthy to not move. It's not healthy to be obese. It's not. We know it's not. You can argue science all day long and say, I will say this, and this is the honest to goodness truth, that genetics does play a huge part in whether or not you really have a concern being overweight or not. What I mean by that is that there are people who have genetic predispositions to things like heart disease and stuff like that because they have family history with it. Look at, I forget his last name, but the trainer from The Biggest Loser, the guy Bob, dude's the epitome of health from a exterior perspective. And a couple of years ago, he had what they call the Widowmaker heart attack. Now he survived the heart attack. And the doctors basically said he survived because he was in the shape that he was. Now, they literally said, his doctor literally said that had he not been in the shape that he was in, he would have absolutely died. So what's crazy about that is that even though he had a genetic predisposition to heart disease, and it was something that happened in this family, other members of his family had died from it, because he chose to live the lifestyle he does and be in the shape that he was and be as strong as he was, he made it through something that 9 times out of 10 people die from. If that's not a testament, I don't know what is, right? I mean, that is, so you look at things like that and you look at COVID. Let's talk about COVID right now. 74% of the people who are dying from COVID are obese and or have high blood pressure, right? And, but you have, when have you heard a single person come forward and say, we need to work on getting the population healthier? Nobody has said a word. They'd rather give you a shot that has the potential to cause all kinds of adverse reactions. We're up over 800,000 adverse reactions reported on the VAERS system, 18,000 deaths. I mean, paralysis, myocarditis, heart attacks. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you what everything that's on there. And they say what most people, the statistic, the believed statistic about the VAERS system is that it's only 1% of the actual issues because they're not being reported. If that's the case, if that truly is the case, and 18,000 people have died and have been reported to VAERS and it's only 1%, that's 1.8 million people. That's insane. That's more people than have died from the coronavirus itself. Well, not necessarily. I think they said the overall death toll at this point is over 5 million worldwide, even though we know that the CDC came out and said that it's really only 6% who have actually died of COVID and not with COVID. But regardless, that's not what this was intended to be about. But, you know, my point is that being fat in most cases, yes, you have some extreme circumstances where you do have people who have thyroid issues, hormone imbalances, stuff like that, that do cause it to make it harder for them to lose weight. So listen, I get it. I'm not denying that there is a medical issue out there for some people, but most people, it's a choice. Most people do not monitor what they eat. They don't move enough and they don't care enough about themselves, their family, and their future to actually put their health first. You know, and that's something that I don't care who you are. You know, I mean, I don't care if you're a world-renowned pop star making millions of dollars. You're not worth shit when you're laying in the coffin. You know, and at the end of the day, what's most important to me is being here for my wife and for my girls. Walking my girls down the aisle, meeting my grandbabies. You know, being able to have a life beyond, you know, my 40s, my 50s. You know what I mean? I mean, I look at the, you know, if I'm able to make it to the median age, which is, I think, 73 or 74 years old in the U.S. right now, I will feel pretty good. If I can make it past that, I'll feel even better. You know, and that's the thing that I feel like a lot of people, I feel like a lot of people simply deny that, right? Like, and it's just silly. You know, you that's the one thing that you can control. You know, can you control whether you get cancer or not? In my honest opinion, I don't believe so, because I feel like there are people who are genetically predisposed to cancer, different forms of cancers, mental issues. You know, I do feel like that, unfortunately, there are a lot of diseases that are genetic and that can't, there's not a whole lot that can really be done about them. So no matter what you do, you're either going to deal with it or you're not. But it doesn't mean that you can't work on yourself. Like look at Bob. Let's go back to Bob, right? If Bob had been, the doctor said if he had been 20 pounds heavier, he probably wouldn't have made it. That dude has been busting his ass for years as a coach to maintain the physique that he has, to stay as healthy as he does, to eat the way that he does. And I'm sure in the back of his mind, he knows his family history. He knows that there's other people in his family who have died from heart disease and from heart attacks and, you know, all kinds of other stuff, I'm sure, that they have that was going on. And he probably always had that in the back of his mind and was like, look, I'm going to do everything I can to combat this and be as healthy as I possibly can. So there's no reason why the rest of us can't do the same exact thing. There is nothing saying that you might be 50 years old and end up with cancer and in 6 months pass away. But I promise you that if you put your health first right now, today, and you start working towards a path of a better you, you will be happier, you'll have more energy, you'll be able to do more things that you can't currently do. And most importantly, you'll have a sense of accomplishment because you'll know that you took control of something in your life. And I think that's massive. And one of the things that a lot of people just don't, you know, comprehend. One of the things that's beautiful about this beer community, right? And I love you guys for this, is that I love the whole earn your beer perspective and hashtag, right? I have quite a few friends on Instagram where every day they sweat check each other and they're like, sweat check. And they come on and they're like, earn your beer. And I love that, right? Because there's nothing that says that you should have to live a life where you're completely deprived of all the things you love. But moderation is key. And the opposition to moderation is work, right? So you get in the gym, you hustle, you sweat, you burn calories, you give yourself the right to have a few beers if you want or whatever the case may be. And in most situations, if you're in a position right now where you have weight you need to lose, you're gonna have to deprive yourself for a little while. But you can eventually get to a point where you're in a maintenance scenario where you can have food more often, have foods that you like. And you can see, at the end of the day, I hear a lot of people with food addictions like myself who say things like, oh, well, I can't eat what I want and this and that. Listen, I don't know about you, but I've gotten to a point in my life right now where I can't eat like shit all the time, right? I can't. Like, yes, I love fried food. Yes, I love chicken tenders. Yes, I love wings. Yes, I love potato skins and bar food and, you know, mozzarella sticks and french fries and, you know, all the other shit out there that we all know we're not supposed to eat. I love pizza. I love, you know, cheeseburgers. I mean, dude, I mean, I love sushi. I mean, you name it, I love it. And the sushi is probably one of the least, you know, except for the sauces and stuff that really is bad for you. But I love food in general. But I can't eat the way I used to. You know, I mean, I'm 41 years old now and I'm at the point now where, dude, I don't wanna be shitting my brains out all day long after going to town on some nasty, you know, fried food. Will I eat it once in a while and maybe deal with it just to indulge myself? Yes. But I am I'm set at a point right now where I would much rather be happy, be healthy, and not be sitting on the toilet all day by eating reasonable foods. And we're not talking about like boring shit that like, oh, you're only gonna eat like chicken, rice, and vegetables all day long. No, I'm not talking about that. But I'm careful with my consumption of things like cheeses, thick sauces, even like very like acidic sauces like marinara, you know, buffalo sauce, you know, things like that. I'm lactose intolerant. So for me, I gotta stay away from things like, you know, that are very milk heavy, you know, some salad dressings and things like that even kill me. But I'm very careful, like what I eat, you know what I mean? Like I might have oatmeal for breakfast and a banana. I have my egg protein that I drink along with collagen protein that I drink that helps also, that aids with my recovery, but also works with my stomach. Doesn't bother me, you know. Whey protein in most cases bothers my stomach, and even if it's only once, I end up having diarrhea at some point throughout the day. It may only be one time. I may only go to the bathroom once, and it kind of like, I guess all that protein comes out and then I'm good to go after that, but it's a waste. So why would I even do that? So I've switched over to the egg protein and the collagen, and it's so much better. you know, and that I typically will have, I don't shy away from things that I like. So I might eat a cold cut sandwich for lunch. I might have salami with cheese, light mayonnaise and wheat bread or something like that. I mean, I'm not depriving myself of flavors and things that I like. I'm just being careful with what, you know, I know there's certain kinds of cheeses I can have that don't tear my stomach up. I know, and I follow, ultimately what I do is I follow my calories, right? Calories in, calories out. So I keep track of what I eat. And I know that every day, this is the number that I have to stay under. And I stay within 100 to 200 calories of that for the most part. Some days I'm a lot less. Even though I try and I've been working my ass off. That's been a struggle for me since I started 75 Hard, is trying to actually get all my calories in every day. And I've actually gotten to the point now where I'm using more supplementation to try to get closer to the calories. So in the last like 2 weeks, I've been within 100 to 200 just about every day. And I do not compensate for my workouts. So, and what I mean by that is if my calories right now are at 4,500. So I eat 4,500 calories a day. I know most of you probably hear that number and go, what the fuck? But remember, I'm a big dude, 270 pounds. And although I do have a lot more fat than I was hoping to at this point, I still have a lot of muscle. I'm just a big dude overall. So I'm losing weight consuming 4,500 calories every day. And that's, well, I'm probably around 41 to 44 typically, but, and then obviously I train every day, or at least I do cardio at least 6 days a week. And I train at least 5 days a week. The goal is 6 and 6, but sometimes you just got to listen to your body and give yourself a break. But, and on the days that I don't train, I eat less. So I shoot for like 2,500 calories on my off days. And I fast every day. So what I do is I typically will, my last meal is around 8 o'clock at night, and I won't eat until noon the next day. So like it's 9:30 in the morning when I'm recording this with you guys right now. I would be ready for my first meal at noon. So about 2.5 hours away. And, you know, and that works. It's been working well for me. And obviously, as I lose weight, I'll continue to adjust my calories down. If I notice that I plateau, my calories will get dropped. I haven't touched my calories since I started. I've been at 4,500 since day one, and I'm still losing weight. So that's why I've left it at 4,500. Now, excuse me. As soon as I hit, like I said, a plateau or things slow down or I stop losing weight, then I will definitely adjust my calories down and keep moving on from there. So my kid keeps texting me because she's on a code yellow lockdown at her school. They're saying no imminent threat, but there was something, I guess, that happened within the neighborhood or surrounding area of the school that they're keeping an eye on. So they want the halls kept clean, kept clear. So we're all kind of on edge waiting for the kids to let us know that they're free and clear and everything is good to go. Always fun. Jesus. But, you know, I go back, you know, to like the post I made, and it's amazing to me to see like the people come out of the woodwork that are like, man, you've always been an inspiration to me. You know, I appreciate you so much. Thank you for sharing your story, you know, and it's not easy, man. Like sharing stuff like that is embarrassing, right? Posting up fat pictures of myself, posting up, you know, and telling people how many times I've done this is, it's embarrassing to me because I look at it and I go, why didn't I just keep the weight off the first time? You know, I busted my ass from April of 2013 to February of 2015. I lost 186 pounds. I went from over 400 pounds to 223 pounds. And I look back at that and I go, why? Like, why didn't I just work from where I was and get better? You know, like why did I let myself, and I did. I mean, I will say this, that for years, so when I lost that weight in 2015, I didn't get back to what I would consider to be an unhealthy weight until like 2000, probably like 18, 19, right? So for a good 5 years, I just focus on getting better, right? And I bulked up a couple times, so I got a little on the chunky side, and then I lost weight again, and, you know, and got cut up, got a little bit more cut up again. And so it was always kind of like a back and forth battle. And But I was consistent until then. And then ultimately, you guys all know the story. I lost my job, went through a really big battle with depression, didn't train consistently for about 6 months, and ended up, you know, just slowly putting weight on. And then COVID and, you know, I mean, all this other stuff. And next thing I knew, I had gotten to around the 300-pound mark a couple times. But I always managed to kind of come fighting back and get back down under 300. And it really wasn't until COVID that I found myself back in the 300s and just nothing I could do. You know what I mean? I mean, at one point they had actually closed our gym down in the apartment complex I was living in at the time, and I wasn't even able to go to the gym and work out. They had actually shut the power off. So even if I wanted to go in there and like try to use the elliptical or something like that, the ones they had were actually electronic and required being plugged in. They weren't the type that runs off of concentric energy where you just move the pedals and it starts going. These were actually mechanical that had to be plugged in, and the legs would actually lock in place if it didn't have power. And the only thing they had in there that I could actually ride was a bike. And the bike, the seat was broken and it wouldn't stay in one spot. So it was a nightmare. Like, I'd get on the bike and I'd be riding in, all of a sudden the seat would fly back and my feet would fly off the pedals, and then I'd have to get reset. And then I dealt with that for weeks, right? And then one day, it just like flung me back and my foot came out and the pedal came around and whacked me in the shin and took my skin off. And I was like, fuck you. I got fucking pissed. And I jumped up and I was like, fuck this goddamn thing. I'm getting out of here. And then, of course, you know, I tried to buy like some exercise bands. There was nothing out there. The ones I ended up buying were like for sports training. They were designed for like pitchers and football kickers and stuff like that. They weren't really intended to be used for what I wanted to use them for. So there's no variables. It's one weight all the time. The only way you can make it a little bit more difficult is if you like stand on them and you widen your feet to give it less movement, less travel. But even then, they just bottom out. They don't continue to stretch. So I did as much as I could with those. I actually ended up finally finding a bike because they were basically all sold out everywhere once things started opening back up again. But ultimately, the bike led me to the hospital because it actually ended up irritating my L4, L5, and I wasn't able to continue to ride the bike. Even though I had been doing it for a few weeks and I was starting to lose some weight, I was down about 20 pounds riding the bike. And then I went through a whole, you know, round of depression because of that, because of my back. And things, when my back really got bad, that's when I really got heavy. And I ended up hitting my max weight this year, 2021, was 387 pounds. So officially, as of this week, I am 270 pounds. So I've lost 117 pounds. Fucking crazy, dude. 117 pounds. When I weighed 387 was in February, and then when I went to the hospital in March, I was 361, because basically what I did, the reason I was able to lose the 26 pounds that I did there was because I stopped drinking beer basically altogether. I would have like one beer a week, and I cut back drastically on the beer, which had been a huge thing during COVID. I mean, during COVID, I was buying 3-4 packs of beer a week and drinking. I mean, I was going through them. I was hitting every can release and shipping beers out to buddies, having buddies ship beers to me because we had nothing else to do. You know, so beer just became fun to put a lot more energy and effort into my beer page and everything else because there was nothing else going on. Spent a lot of money I shouldn't have on things like EDCs and stuff like that. And now I'm stuck with a bunch of these tools that I'll never use and can't get nobody to buy. So that was kind of like my experience during COVID. But so I lost 26 pounds from February to March and to the end of March, March 31st, because that was the day that I ended up in the hospital because of my back. And I was 361, and I had weighed in at 387 earlier at my regular doctor in February. And then, so from March to June, I stayed basically exactly the same. I was right around 360, 361, 363, like back and forth. So that when I went in on June 7th to have my injections in my back, I got out that day, and the next morning, the next day is when I started actually going and working out, and mildly, and I woke up that morning and weighed myself, and I was exactly 361. And started moving, you know, from that point forward. And that's when I was training just about every day. I think I was doing 3 days on, 1 day off for like 2 or 3 weeks until June 23rd, when I officially started 75 hard. And I've been hustling, you know, ever since. So am I proud of that? Yeah. But do I look at myself even in this camera right now and see, you know, my fat cheeks, you know, the side boob fat, you know, on my pecs and things like that? Yeah, dude, and it drives me fucking crazy, and I hate it. And, you know, that's the unfortunate thing, is that everybody has like problem areas, right? And when I lost all the weight that I lost and it was down to 223 pounds, I still had that stubborn like side fat on my pecs, and that wasn't quite gone. And instead of continuing to work towards getting rid of that and then trying to put on clean muscle, all I saw was this tiny fucking dude when I looked in the mirror every time after spending so much time being such a big guy. And I said, fuck that. And I started bulking. And when I started bulking, immediately I started getting love handles and belly fat and more boob fat around my pecs, because that's where I hold my fat. Right, I hold my fat in my stomach, my love handles, and on my pecs. And so even when I felt like I was in my best shape ever, which was 270 pounds with the outline of abs, I still had fat around my pecs and a little bit of love handle in the back. But it was crazy, because it seems to me like obviously the pec fat is going to be the hardest fat for me to lose. And I've committed to myself that this time I'm going to get in the best shape of my life, and I'm going to maintain that for the rest of my life. And I'm going to get myself to a point where I'm happy, where I'm comfortable, where I can go to the beach and the pool and take my shirt off and not be embarrassed and not be concerned with what other people think about me. And we're not talking, you know, I'm not talking how I was or how I felt on when I was 270 pounds with abs. I'm talking about a completely new version of myself that nobody has ever seen. And I'm not talking about 5% body fat shredded to the bone, you know, looking, you know, like I'm stage ready bodybuilder. I'm not talking about that, but I am talking about abs. I'm talking about potentially being able to see oblique muscles, you know, and things like that. And that's what I want. You know, I would love to be around 12 to, you know, 10 to 12% body fat and just maintain that and work from there and go into a maintenance phase and be able to enjoy life and stay. See, what a lot of people don't realize too is that once you achieve that level of conditioning, that level of leanness, once you get down to like, let's say any, I would say anything sub 15% body fat for a guy, it becomes a lot easier to maintain, because now you have less fat and more muscle, and the more muscle you have, the more calories your body burns. So you have less concern, as long as you continue to train, continue to work out, and continue to eat right 90% of the time, you can enjoy life and not be as concerned about the actual calories you're taking in. Because let's say, you know, you go on a bender for a weekend and you go visit some friends, or you go on vacation, or you do whatever, and you eat a ton of shitty food and drink a bunch of alcohol, whatever else, and maybe you don't train for the entire weekend. You come home Monday morning, you're 5 pounds heavier. You're like, holy fuck. Attacking in the gym all week long. Eat consistent, stay healthy for the week. You know, work your ass off in the gym. 9 times out of 10, you're gonna work all that crap off, right? And it's not, you're not really gaining and losing weight. You're gaining and losing water, because a lot of times what happens, you more so than anything, what a lot of people don't realize, and let's get into this a little bit about food, is okay, you cannot eat a cheeseburger that weighs 6 ounces in total, meaning patty, bun, lettuce, tomato, ketchup, everything, and gain a pound. But you can eat a cheeseburger that's 6 ounces and see a pound increase on the scale, because that burger may cause you to retain water. And with the water retention and the weight of the burger, you can see a pound fluctuation on the scale, but more than likely by the next day it will be gone, right? And a lot of people don't understand that. You can only gain the amount of weight equivalent to the amount of excess food you eat. So 3,500 calories is equivalent to a pound of weight, right? Hang on one second. Sorry. I don't know why I'm getting all froggy all of a sudden, but 3,500 calories is equivalent to a pound. So if you eat 3,500 calories, I apologize, guys. I might have to try to edit that out. 3,500 calories is equivalent to a pound. So if you eat 3,500 calories above and beyond your maintenance calories, you have the potential to gain a pound, right? But not very often does that really happen. And at the end of the day, nobody really knows their true basal metabolic rate. Right? Every person is different. And you can go by calculations all day long. We can do whatever. But if you really don't know how much muscle mass you have and how much fat mass you have and how active you are and what your average heart rate is and what your respiratory rate is, all this other stuff, you cannot truly know your basal metabolic rate, which is the amount of calories your body actually burns daily at rest. So if you just sat in the chair all day and just existed, that would be how many calories your body would burn. Yes. Please don't turn this show off right now because I'm having this stupid issue, but hopefully after a little bit more water, I'll be okay. And the point I'm trying to make is that everybody burns a little bit more or a little bit less than they really think they do. Which is why we always kind of abide by a window of 500 calories per day, which is shooting for a pound of weight loss per week. I happen to do a little bit more than that because I know for a fact that during my workouts, I'm probably burning about 750 to 1,000 calories, and I do not compensate for that. So if I'm eating 4,200 calories on a maintenance of, let's say, 4,000, but I'm burning 1,000 in the gym, I'm still losing weight. But that's what a lot of people don't understand. Like, a lot of people will go out to eat a dinner, and maybe your entire meal was 2,000 calories. And maybe you went over your calories for the day by 1,000, right? So maybe you go home that night and you're like, damn, dude, I indulged today. But really, you only ate 1,000 more calories than you normally would on a maintenance day. When you wake up in the morning and you weigh yourself and you see the scale says a pound and a half heavier than you were the day before, that's not true weight. Most of that, dependent upon the foods that you're eating, is going to be water weight. And it will come off. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. And water weight, inflammation, you know, things like that. So that's why the scale is not as useful of a tool as a lot of people make it. Visualization is key, man. You look in the mirror, you see your body changing, you keep doing what you're doing. You look in the mirror, your body's not changing, or you see your body going in the opposite direction of what you want, you make changes. You know what I mean? The scale is a tool, just like anything else. But the people that get on the scale every day, you just mind fuck yourself. You should only be getting on the scale once a week. And I make sure that I get on the scale on Sunday morning after my morning poop and I weigh myself completely fasted after I've eliminated everything from my stomach that was there. And then that's my weight that I consider for the week. If it's heavy, it's heavy. If it's light, it's light. If it's, you know, a loss, it's a loss. If it's a gain, it's a gain. You know, I go off of that. And that's, I try to keep that the same every single day. And because of that, I try not to do anything crazy Saturday, right? Like, I might have a beer or two during the day on Saturday, but once it hits like 5-6 o'clock, I try not to have anything at night unless I have something planned or I'm going out and doing something. My typical days where I might have beer is going to be Friday and Saturday, Friday and Sunday. So, and that's just me. I mean, not, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you lose weight for the week, you lose weight for the week. If you don't, you don't. It is what it is. But, and it's going to transpire over time, because obviously if you're doing the right things, you're not going to weigh yourself every Sunday and you're going to be the same exact weight unless you're trying to maintain, you know, the weight that you have. And maybe I got a little boring with this, and I apologize, guys, because I went a little heavy on the whole health and fitness thing, but I think it's important. You know, I think especially in the climate that we're in right now, where, you know, the government especially is shoving big pharma down our throats and trying to make everybody believe that the only way to improve anything is to take a pill or take a shot or, you know, do this. I mean, ask yourself this question, man. Why, if COVID is so deadly, why are people dying in the hospital? Why have we not heard of anybody being found dead at home and died from COVID? Ask yourself that question. People are dying in the hospital from COVID because they're being mistreated. And I don't mean they're being called assholes and told to fuck off. I mean, the treatment they've been giving is wrong. Remdesivir is not the right treatment for COVID-19. It causes your lungs to fill up with fluid, which in turn puts you on a ventilator. And once you're on a ventilator, it's basically a death sentence when you have COVID. Very few people have come off of a ventilator after having COVID and survived, unless they were in fantastic shape and a strong person and made it through. People are not being treated properly for COVID-19 because the hospitals are making money, big pharma's making money, the government's making money. And because of that, they are pushing the wrong treatments on purpose. That's why they keep telling everybody that things like ivermectin, which has been proven to work massively against COVID, it's horse dewormer. Don't take it. You're a kook. You're a freak. You know, you're taking horse medicine, despite the fact that it's been, there's been a humanized version of ivermectin for 30 plus years, and it won the Nobel Peace Prize. But, you know, or the Nobel Prize, or, you know, whatever. And I just, it is what it is, man. I just laugh that, you know, but that's big pharma, and they're in the pockets of every politician. You know, that's why Pfizer's commercials are all over the place. And they, you know, it's, I mean, you look at the board heads of all these companies, and they are people who, I mean, there was an FBI, an FDA director who's now the head of Pfizer. There's an FDA director who was now the head of Moderna. There's, I mean, come on. Like, if none of that stuff matters to you, then you're not paying attention. You know, ivermectin has actually been touted as a cancer, as a potential cure for cancer, but it's not listed as a, it's not listed as a medicine that's actually a treatment for cancer. Why? Because the oncology itself is an $86 billion a year industry. So why the hell would Big Pharma want to lose $86 billion by selling you a $9 pill or a dollar or $1 pill? You know, so you got to look at it. It's all about the money, man. And at the end of the day, if we can just focus on getting healthier as a nation and taking care of ourselves, is going to alleviate a lot of this bullshit. But it amazes me how to this day we still have yet to have anybody, Surgeon General, you know, Dr. Fauci, nobody has come forward and said, get healthier, America. Move, go work out, go to the gym, take care of yourselves, eat healthier, eat better, take vitamins. Nope, they have not a single fucking one of them has said anything about that, because all they want you to do is put your arm out and take the jab. Why? Ask yourself why. Ask yourself why. And any ungodly understanding or any ungodly explanation you can come up with for yourself That's exactly why they're doing it. It's just absolutely insane. I mean, look at this new, you know, charge against Fauci and the NIH for giving money for research where they put beagles, they drugged puppy beagles, stuck their heads in tents filled with sandflies, and allowed the sandflies to literally eat their entire heads off. What are they testing for? What nasty, disgusting human being would think that that is an okay way to test anything? It doesn't make any sense. And us as Americans should not be funding that shit. That's absolutely horrible and evil. And if somebody would fund something like that, then for you to put it past them that they would push a unworthy vaccine just to put money in their pockets, you'd be wrong. All right, ladies and gents, Luke, I'm out. Sorry if I bored you to death with health and fitness stuff, but I hope some of you learned something from this and potentially took something home from it. Stay healthy, stay happy, don't drink and drive. Love y'all. Later.